Hello, everyone. Okay, so food production in high tunnels is a growing practice. In a 2010 survey, it was found that 42% of growers in the Midwest, in Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, and in Iowa were utilizing high tunnels for major crop production. We also found that 23% of growers in that area were interested in obtaining high tunnels for major crop production. So the thing with high tunnels is that farmers utilize high tunnels because they create a microclimate that's favorable for, in many locations, year-round production. However, this year-round production or this intensive production practices such as short crop rotations, use of fertilizers on farm, and frequent tillage have their impacts on the overall soil health. So when thinking about utilizing high tunnels, farmers should look at how their practices overall affect the soil ecology. So intensive agricultural practices can lead to soil erosion, decreases in soil biomass, and also in overall biodiversity. In this study, we're going to focus on the macrofauna found in the soil and how these macrofauna are important according to the literature when it comes to helping with nutrient mineralization, also with shredding, organic matter, and all these things. So what we're looking to employ is cover crops in these high tunnels to see if they can add a sustainable source of nutrients to the soil and seeing how these macrofauna interplay with this. So soil health is, as I stated earlier, one of the most important aspects of the high tunnel. While a farmer who makes this investment in a high tunnel system may think of the structure as such high value real estate on the farm, the soil that's underneath this tunnel, if it's not a movable tunnel, is so important because it's made to support below ground organisms and it helps with the overall production of the food. So we're finding that cover cropping is a great alternative for organic growers for adding nutrients back to the soil in a sustainable way without some of the negative effects that can happen over long-term use of compost, which can build up salts in the soil. So some of the research objectives that we have are to identify cover crop species and planting date combinations that produce optimal soil health management during narrow windows of planting time in each of the three seasons studied. And then we want to increase our understanding of below ground arthropod communities based on abundance and their interaction with cover cropping and intensive food production systems. And lastly, we want to expand this area of research. As high tunnel research is growing, we want to be able to meet the demand of farmers who are looking to employ these high tunnels on their farm. So as I stated earlier, it is a three-season study, so there are three independent studies. And we have the summer, the overwinter, and the winter killed season. Today we're going to focus on the overwintering season, which is in the middle of this 200-foot-long high tunnel. So with our materials and methods, our overall study design is that in October 17th of 2017, we planted our cover crops, and these are our cover crop treatments. We have 8 treatments for this season. And then in May, we terminated those cover crops, and we transplanted Declaration bell peppers. So our plots were very small, so we used a 0.1 meter squared quadrant, which is a very small quadrant that we had to create on our own because our plots were 20 square feet. And we took the samples and we dried and weighed the samples. And then we also took subsamples for plant tissue analysis. Now, soil sampling was the biggest part of our research that was ongoing throughout the study. We had 5 different soil sampling time points. And these time points were to collect overall nutritional data when it comes to the total nitrogen, carbon, and organic matter of the soil, and then also for the arthropod piece. So for the arthropods, we collected soil from the top 3-inch layer of the soil profile, and then for the nutrients, we looked at the top 6 inches, which that's also encapsulates the root zone of what your subsequent cash crop would be. So then We took them at seeding of the cover crop, which gave us like a baseline reading of what our soil nutrients might be. And then we did at cover crop termination, and then weeks after cover crop termination, to kind of look at what our below ground arthropod communities are looking like once we add all of these residues of cover crops to the soil. And then also we took subsamples for water content analysis, since arthropod abundance and diversity is affected by the soil water content. So arthropod isolation happened in two steps. We had a sieve system, which is almost like a colander, where we separated soil bulk material from the larger insects. And then we also used a lighted Berlaisi funnel system. So right here, you can see in the middle is the Berlaisi funnel system. Pretty much how it functions is that we took the funnel and we actually lined it with tool. Online it was saying to use mesh, and we get a little creative at our research center, so we found tool to line the funnel, and we added soil in there. And what happens is that the light from the Berlaisi funnel system, it actually drives the insects into the vials based off the heat. So the heat that's generated makes the insects very hot and makes them want to escape into this isopropyl alcohol, sadly though, to their death. So from there we were able to identify the insects to families using a microscope and also a entomologist in Manhattan. So with our results, we're going to discuss a little bit of the actual biomass results, the soil data, and then also all of this that we're going to look at in response to the arthropod communities. So our cover crop biomass. So we had some high biomass accumulators, which were the rye and legume and the triticale and legume and the rye treatments. We had very low yields when it came to just the legume treatment, which our legume that we're using for this study was the hairy vetch. We didn't have great establishment early on in the season before the cold and the frost came, so it didn't really revive back. So we found that there were significant differences in biomass accumulation across the eight treatments. However, it did not have a main effect on the arthropod abundance or diversity. So when it comes to cover cropping, farmers and growers are very much so interested in nitrogen. What is the nitrogen that we're able to get from these cover crops? So there's a calculation that we use based off of the ASER document, and pretty much we were able to calculate what could be the potential available nitrogen that these cover crops can lend to the growing system. And we found that some of these high biomass accumulators were able to replace nearly half the amount of half or more of the amount of nitrogen recommendations for our subsequent cash crop, which were bell peppers. However, when thinking about how that translated to how much nitrogen we actually had in the soil when we planted our cash crop, we didn't see any significant changes, even when compared to the bare control. However, we did see over the cover crop planting to the 8 weeks post-termination, we did find a lot of changes in the total nitrogen with the high biomass accumulators. So at the 2 week mark after termination, you don't see any significant differences, but in 8 weeks afterward, you see that the total nitrogen was changing. So there was no significant interaction of arthropod abundance with the total nitrogen percentage, but according to the ANOVA output, we did find significant changes in total carbon, and we did find significant changes in organic matter, but the total carbon did not, there was no statistical significant interaction with the arthropod abundance. So we're going to look at the organic matter. So the organic matter, I made this visualization of it where you can kind of see where the arthropod abundance was. You can kind of see the arthropod abundance, how it was affected by the organic matter percentage in the soil. And we found that the highest amount of the rye and the vetch were the highest amount of organic matter, and then the wheat contributed the lowest amount of organic matter to the system, especially when compared to the control. And there was a significant interaction with arthropod abundance. So in that sweet spot, I guess you could see between 4 and 4.3, you could see that there was a higher abundance of arthropod activity in the soil. Now, what we're finding out about this study is that it's really reflective of farmer practices, in that a farmer who's utilizing a high tunnel intensively over and over again, sometimes they can allow their soils to get extremely dry because of the overuse. And when we terminated our cover crops, we actually found no arthropods inside the soil at all. The soil was just so dry that there was no life really happening, at least on the arthropod level, inside the soil. But as once we terminated, we added water to the system, as we would expect a grower would, to actually break down these residues. And once we added water to the system, we saw that those arthropod numbers started to rise and they started to increase. So there were significant changes in the percent soil water content in the rye and vetch treatments, also when compared to the bare control. So if you see here, this is a better visualization of how you see the arthropod abundance being affected by the soil water content. As you can see, on the left flank where there is less soil water content, there is less abundance. But once you get towards 14, between 24, you see a high abundance of arthropods. But once the soil got too wet, then the arthropods were also no longer found. So there was a strong relationship between soil water content and arthropod abundance. So some of the classifications of insects we found, number one were arachnids. We found so many mites. You know, when I was going to put the percentages here, it was pretty much, it was 92.8% mites. Everything else was very lesser. So we found that these mites predominated the soil. And the mites are very important because they are micro shredders, which help with breaking down crop residues in general. So in discussion, biomass accumulation was highest for some of these grassy crops, such as the rye and the triticale, and which can give a potential of nitrogen credit gains. And then we also found that the total nitrogen, there were a lot of changes in total nitrogen over the long term for these high biomass accumulators, while you didn't see it in the short term, though. There were significant changes in the soil carbon percentage and organic matter, but the organic matter played a bigger part and actually played a significant part in affecting the arthropod abundance. And the most influential variable, however, on arthropod abundance was the soil water content, as high tunnel soils are unable to support below ground organisms if they do not have water in the system. So we also found that mites, they predominated the soils, and other arthropods were found, but in lesser numbers. So in conclusion, farmer practices are really important in affecting the overall soil ecology and below ground arthropods. And cover cropping can add nutrients back to the soil, but however, in your first cover cropping rotation, you might not see any significant changes, but in the long term, you can see those changes, at least based on the literature. And there were no treatment effects on cover crop species or mixtures on arthropod abundance in year one overwintering season. So in the future, we plan on collecting year two data. We actually had our last soil sampling yesterday. I was sad that I could not be there. Oh, so sad. but we'll be analyzing that data and pretty much being able to compare what that data looks like to this year's data. And then we're going to investigate how summer and winter kill cover crops also compare. And special thanks to all of my funders, North Central SARE, the Graduate Student Grant, and USDA, specifically the OREI, and my major advisor, and my co-advisors, and all the people at the OREC who have helped me with my endeavors. Thank you.
Different mites eat different things. So the mites mm-hmm. that you found, what part of the cover crops would they likely be feeding?
So they are mainly feeding on the plant tissue, not on the roots. So at least that's from what I was talking to my entomology yeah. professor about, but we didn't identify them to species. We only identified them to families. So really just looking at broadly what they are. Yes.
So the pepper yields, were they affected by those cover crops or not?
No, there were no significant differences in pepper yields. I could have added the pepper yield data, but it just became so much to add. Yes?
I have a question about, you're saying when it's dry, the population of nematodes, not nematodes, but insects with non-existent.
Yeah.
Where are your, once it's moist, where are they coming from? Are there eggs in the soil, or are they moving in from outside?
Well, from what we're looking at, what I'm thinking is that they're coming from in the soil from other places in the high tunnel, to following the moisture. But I'm not sure if they are actually, you know, now hatched eggs or so now that it's now that the moisture conditions have changed. So.
Thanks again.
Thank you.